The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, every parent has had that moment. You take your eyes off a child for what you think is a few seconds. You then finish what you're doing and your blood runs cold. The child is nowhere to be seen. It happened to us, actually, in an airport bookshop. Happily, the straying daughter was quickly found buried in a Harry Potter or some such thing. But that brief interlude is the stuff of nightmares. And of course, it happened in real life with Madeleine McCann, and there was no happy ending there. But this all-too-familiar parental fright is how the debut novel of my next guest begins. It's called Breaking, and author Amanda Cassidy, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks so much for having me in studio today.
Now, I'm sure you've had a few of those moments yourself.
Yes, I think every parent has had those what-if moments. And I guess writing the book, I wanted to turbocharge those maternal anxieties and drop them into a five-star beach resort.
Yeah, explain the characters, because we are not in Ireland. We are in America. We're in Florida, but we are Irish.
That's right. So Breaking, it's the story of an Irish mother who loses her child on a beach in the Florida Keys. 8-year-old Lana Fitzpatrick goes missing while her mother, Mirren Fitzpatrick, is drinking in a beach bar nearby. Predictably, the media turns on her. And when she's caught out in a lie, things turn a little bit more sinister. Then there's the US detective, Antonio Rolle, and he's tasked with finding the child. But while everybody's focusing on the sins of the mother, the so-called sins of the mother, only Antonio Rolle is asking the most important question of all, which is what happened to Alana Fitzpatrick on the beach that day and how did she just vanish into thin air?
Yeah, I mean, it's intriguing. I'm about halfway through and there's just been a twist, so I can't even talk freely about the twist that emerges. I suspect I'm about to get to the lie that the mother is caught out in, but I won't do any more than that. And now the scenario is we have a medical pediatric oncologist in Mirren Fitzpatrick, who's not alone known in Ireland, but known internationally. And therefore, when her child goes missing, It's an international story, whereas another local child had gone missing a few months before and it's no big deal.
Yeah, it's down to that status thing, isn't it? The perceived importance of some people over others. And I think that's a theme that runs through fiction quite a bit, but it was also the themes of motherhood that appealed to me to write. I think that relationship between parent and child, that's always really fascinated me. The role of motherhood when it comes to shaping a person has universal appeal. So I wondered what would happen if my main character, Mirren, her mother didn't mother her correctly. And I wonder what happened if that filtered down through the generations. And what if you'd never been taught how to be this perfect mother or even an acceptable mother?
And just in passing, you mentioned that her mother, Nora, had gone looking to make to meet her own mother in a previous generation and was rebuffed on two occasions.
That's right. So there's generational trauma here. There's that they're a shadow living within a shadow. So when Mirren is sitting on the beach drinking in a bar that day, when her daughter goes missing, I wanted the, and that's why I wrote in the first person, I wanted the reader to be in her head as she runs up and down that beach, hating herself because she feels like this is the outcome she deserved. So is she, inverted commas, bad because she was drinking on the beach? Is she bad because of the superstitions she's grown up with or because she wasn't taught how to be a mother? Or is she just bad?
And then there's a further complication because she has two daughters. One was born to her, and then they adopted the younger girl who goes missing. And she has to admit to herself very early on the book, so it's not a spoiler, that maybe she loved the older one, the one naturally born to her, more than she loved the adopted girl. Controversial enough.
Yes, and there were themes that were quite risky to write about, and I was... I always had to make sure that I was writing about it in a way that was fair to people who have been adopted or adopted children. So while I did focus on motherhood, I think there is also the controversy when it comes to having a favourite child, biological or not. So I enjoyed writing about those topics that can make people at book clubs, for example, talk about it and discuss it. But also it's quite interesting to me, the reverberations on family life from, say, crime, because I was a journalist and I am a journalist. So I think writing other people's stories has been something I've always done. And this time it was up to me to change that ending or to shape it in some way.
Okay. And I don't know what the ending is yet. So I'm intrigued. Did you draw on the very public case of Madeleine McCann in this? Because we have not a British doctor, but an Irish doctor in a foreign place, a sunny place, and you have a missing child. But what you would have observed I don't know, I don't suppose you were ever part of it, but the media scrum around the McCanns, which even though the story is not parallel in that way, the media scrum is.
Certainly, and I grew up with the loss of Madeleine McCann and with other crimes and cases that I've reported on when I was in Sky News and here in News Talk. And I was just so horror struck by a lot of these cases that when I turned off the recorder or went home or drove home and closed my laptop, I just wonder what would happen to the family dynamics of when crime would affect them. And that fascinated me. So I wanted to take those stories and shape them in a way that you could be more creative and you could. I was never satisfied with the real life endings. So in this way, you could be creative with what could really happen.
Now, writing this during the pandemic, first of all, as a journalist, it's all about deadlines. I mean, I always say if I get in here at a minute to nine, I'm on time, even though I'm in here couple of hours beforehand. But, you know, suppose the traffic is bad or something happens. If I get in at a minute to nine, I'm on time. If it's a minute past nine, I'm desperately late. But if for journalists, it's all about deadlines. Get the script ready just before air. This time you're looking at text that you've written and you're going to have to edit it and look at it again and try to make it perfect because it's not gone over the ether in a few seconds to be forgotten later in the day. And tomorrow you have another chance to do it all again. It's going to be there between the pages of a book.
It's really interesting that you say that because that was probably one of the biggest struggles I found in throughout this whole process. It was that adjustment because I'm quite hurricane-like and I think as a journalist you'd have to be. You're writing a story 30 seconds before you go on air. So the idea of sitting down and writing for hours each day, it was definitely an adjustment for me to do that. But I figured that if I could write 1,000 words a day for 80 or 90 days, I'd have a book. And for me, that's the equivalent of writing an article. And so I felt that was quite doable. It was also during the pandemic when times were so uncertain. So I think that definitely helped towards the creative process. Everything was quite quiet. I kind of dared myself to see if I could write a book.
Now, you, in your dedication, you mention your beloved who read, he read every word you wrote.
He loves this. He loves this, that I'm saying this about him. But it is true. And I think that level of support is something that that is quite important to it. Yeah, he minded the children while I was taking my hours every day to write while he was working himself because he knew that I needed that quiet time. And I think it's really important because it's quite a lonely process writing and there is no collaborative partner. And at this stage, it was before I was agented and it was before I had a publisher. So you're writing, as you said, into the ether. So you need somebody. And my sister was also very instrumental to this as well. You need somebody to say, am I mad here? Or what do you think of this character? Or should I kill her?
The power of the novelist.
The power of the novelist, yeah.
And often maybe writers who are embarking for the first time get too fond of their characters, whereas a seasoned writer might say, he's got to go.
Yeah, and I don't plan though, so I never know who's about to die. I think sometimes it's nice just to just write and just see where the story takes you.
Now, this one is just in the shops right now. It's called Breaking, and it's a terrific read, as I'm discovering as I embark on the second half. Have you another one on the way?
Yes, I've written my second book already. I wanted to write as quickly as possible, free from any opinions, so I wouldn't write self-consciously. So the second book is similar in that it is the impact of crime and family dynamics, but it's about a house fire, and that's out in July 27th. And I'm my third book is slowly unfolding, which is a little different, but I'm really excited about how it's shaping up.
Wow, what productivity! I'm amazed, and no COVID to keep you indoors.
Nothing
so there
yet.
You are, Amanda Cassidy, who is the author of Breaking, in all good bookshops now and available online, of course, as well. Amanda, thank you very much for joining us in studio today.
Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.